You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, welcome to the At the Hive podcast, part of the SB Nation network of podcasts. This is your host, Jonathan, and I'm joined as always by Chase. Chase, how are you?
I'm doing very well, in spite of the recent results, specifically the most recent result of the Hornets basketball games. I've been doing pretty well.
Full disclosure, I generally watch every Hornets game because if I'm not the one, even if I'm not the one like recapping it or whatever, I need to generally stay abreast of what's going on. I told myself on Monday for the Celtics game that I was like, I don't want to subject myself to this because Chase was covering it, and so I was like, I'm gonna DVR it, I'm gonna look at what the score is later, and if it looks like it was fun, I'll watch it. And the first time I checked the score was like, it was like 40-19. I'm like, yep, good call by me. And it never really got close after that.
No, I think it was like it started 5-4, like in the first quarter, and that was as close as it got. Like the Celtics went on a huge run from there. It was 45-19 after the first quarter. It was funny though because the Hornets outscored the Celtics in two of the four quarters, but they got shellacked in the other two quarters, the first and third, giving up 45 and 43 in those quarters. The Celtics, I mean, the Hornets, it is so funny because Brian Scalabrine, the NBC Sports commentator, I watched this game on NBC Sports because it was an in-market game, so League Pass was like what it was being weird and like laggy because it can't handle simple requests, so I just switched to my normal streaming service and watched it on there. So I was watching the Celtics commentators, who obviously were having a much different experience through this game than any Hornets fan or what Eric and Dell likely were having. That kind of makes me want to go back and watch it just to see Eric's reaction to the first quarter barrage of three pointers. But I mean, the Celtics made 24 threes, they had 40 assists on 55 made field goals. Like, the Hornets just had no chance. Like back to what I started this sentence with, was Brian Scalabrine repeatedly said at the end of the game and in the post-game press conference that the Hornets didn't play that bad. But it's like, Scal, they lost by 35. They gave up 140 points. The Celtics had 121 after three quarters. They were playing bad. They were playing bad. They shot well. The offense wasn't that bad. Shout out to Jalen McDaniels, career high 24 points, career high 4 three-pointers made. PJ had a solid game. Bryce McGowan's and Kai Jones did some cool stuff, but that was all offensively. It was like the worst defensive effort, defensive performance I've ever seen. But I mean, there's like nothing to glean from that game other than just being like, please don't ever do that again.
We shouldn't play the fourth. It's wild to give up 19 points in the fourth quarter in garbage time and still give up 140 for the game.
It's so crazy. There was a point, 121 through three quarters is nuts.
That's like an impressive number to make in four quarters. And I know I checked at one point in maybe mid late third quarter, and Boston was shooting, I think, like 67% from the field.
Yeah, like, they currently have the best offense. Like in NBA history, like their offensive rating from this point in the season, like no team has ever had an offensive rating of 121.5. They're 7 points higher than the second place Suns. And from the Suns to 7 points is 29th to San Antonio.
The difference between first and second is basically the span of almost the entire league.
Yeah, their offensive rating for the Hornets is the league worst, is 105.9. So they are 15 points better, or 16 or 14 points better than the Hornets. So,
which, and that came through loud and clear on Monday
yes,
night.
Yes, it absolutely did.
And Monday night, I think, is a good, especially with the days off that we have here that we're using, taking advantage of to do this, kind of a fork in the road for this season. And it probably, the team itself probably won't make any changes now, but in terms of kind of what our expectations are and what maybe makes more sense, the Hornets, I think, plan on coming, like, well, especially if you date this back to, you know, late June, the Hornets probably plan on coming into the season with the, they very clearly were coming into this season with the extent or the expectation of being competitive. Through injuries and bad play and everything else, they're 6-15. They are the, they have what, the third, tied for the third worst record in the league right now?
Yes, there are only three teams have fewer wins. I don't know about the win percentage part, but Houston, Detroit, and Orlando have all won five games.
Yeah, so they're tied for the, well, they're the fifth worst record in the league behind the Pistons, Magic, Rockets, and Spurs, because the Spurs have one more loss. So where do we go from here? Now, like it's still early. We've played almost exactly a quarter of the season. But for the Hornets to get to 500 from here, they have to, and 500 maybe gets them like in the play-in tournament again, right? So they'd have to go 35-26 the rest of the way, like from today going forward. And we're still missing LaMelo Ball. We're still missing Gordon Hayward. We're still missing Cody Martin. That doesn't seem attainable to you, does it?
No, it really doesn't. I mean, I would imagine that even people like within the building have probably reached that point too, because like you said, yeah, it would have to start the next game. Like, and LaMelo's out, Hayward's out, Cody Martin's out, Dennis Smith Jr.'s out too. Like, he was still in a walking boot in the last game. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't seem like he's coming back anytime soon. And that 11 or 9 games over 500 would just be a preposterous like turnaround for a team that has been like, even when they were close to fully healthy, because they literally have not been fully healthy for one game, I don't think, this year. But even when they were close to fully healthy, they hadn't really like put it together in the way that we had thought that they might offensively. Defensively, they were pretty good. Even now, they're in the top 20 in the league after the 6-15 start, which is pretty solid given the personnel. But I mean, just looking at where they're at now, they're 11.5 games out of first place. So they have like the distance between them and first place and like the teams at the top of the conference is just completely like their records are pretty much flipped. Sixth place, they're 5.5 games back. The Hawks are 12-10. So they still have double the amount of wins that the Hornets do right now. The 10th place, which is the last spot in the play-in, they're only 3.5 games back from that. But that's the Knicks who are 10-12. The Heat are 10-12. Like, you have to imagine that some of these teams in that range might pick it up a little bit. Like, I can't imagine that the Heat are an under 500 team, like, at the end of the year. The Knicks, maybe. The Wizards might fall off a little bit, too. The Pacers as well. They're still 12-8 up there. But, like,
yeah.
There's just so many teams between the Hornets and the playoffs, even if the Hornets got better, that, like, they're also good. And, like, getting past these teams is just like the likelihood of that is so slim. Even if they can come back and get close, like the hole that they've dug through like these 21 games is just too deep. And what's likely to be more than 21 games too, because right, like we've said, like nobody seems really close to coming back other than Dennis Smith potentially.
Right. So because I think Cody Martin's time frame was going to be around, it was like close to Christmas time. Who knows with LaMelo Ball? They're probably going to.
Yeah, they said he had no timetable. Yeah, exactly.
And they'll probably be even more cautious because, and like, shout out to that guy for not picking his feet up when the player was running into him. That's just like poor spatial awareness. Not that it's his fault, but yeah, you gotta pick the feet up when you're sitting on a chair, or if you're sitting and someone's running up on you, you gotta pick your feet up off the floor. That's just common. Common like understanding of how like floor awareness.
Yeah, and like someone has to be blamed for this. Like, this is all of what has happened to the Hornets so far this year, for the most part, is just like bad luck and like poor injury luck. This is something, a very easy thing or person to be blamed now. Like, we can just hang our hats on this and be like, oh, it's because that one guy just didn't move his foot. Like, everything went downhill from there. Like, that was
it'd be really funny if the Hornets end up with the first pick and we get Wimby, and then that guy can be like, if it weren't for me.
Yeah, he shows up to courtside wearing like a white suit and a diamond ring. He's like, you see what this got me? Like, I brought you Wemby. Now I own this franchise.
So, but to circle back where we were, like, 3.5 games is definitely not, like, it doesn't seem unattainable. But I feel like looking at it bigger picture, like I was saying, like, to kind of hit a target of where you would think where you would want to be by the end of the year to be in a desirable playoff spot or even in like a chance to make the playoffs just seems lofty. Like, that seems like the ceiling for a fully healthy Hornets team. And like you said, the Hornets are not even close to fully healthy, and they're not playing anywhere near their ceiling right now. Like, they have no momentum from the players that are playing. It's not like the guys that are playing well, but for their standards, but they're just outclassed. Like, Terry's playing poorly. PJ's like up and down. Mason Plumlee's bad. Kelly Oubre is, I guess, the one exception maybe where he's like playing decently, but he's so far above the kind of role he needs to be playing that it's become a detriment to the team. And so it just doesn't seem like something that is realistic to hope for. And by that, I mean like winning enough games to make this season competitive, right?
Yeah, it would just be so tough to like, because right now you're like, what this offense has essentially become is like alternating Kelly Oubre, Terry at times, but even then he's like he has to play point guard. So you're basically alternating between like Kelly Oubre, PJ, and Jalen McDaniels, whoever is the hottest, as like your shot creator, like shot maker, like floor spacer. And it's like, those guys can't be the very first option on that list of player. Like, they can do those things, like, but they have to be like the third or fourth option, because other, like, the defense can scheme for them in such an easier way than they can for players like LaMelo or Hayward or Terry or whoever else in the NBA that's like a number 1, 2, 3 option, where these guys are like role players, and that's completely fine. They're like, they're very good at that. Like, we saw that last year when Kelly Oubre is playing a role that's fit for Kelly Oubre. He can set a franchise record for 3-pointers made in a game. Like, he can score 37 points. Like, PJ Washington can score 44 on a given night if he's in the right scenario, but that right scenario is not with him as the best player on the team, which is kind of like, on a given night, it's either him, Kelly, Jalen McDaniels. It really hasn't been Terry all that often, unfortunately. Like, he's shooting 30.1% from three on 8.7 attempts per game, 38% from the field. I mean, he's averaging 5.6 assists per game, which is leading the healthy players right now. But LaMelo and DSJ are higher than that. But obviously, neither of them are on the floor right now. But when he's just not like a pure point guard necessarily. He can, you know, snake a pick and roll, create a shot for himself a little bit, like dump it off to Mason or Nick, but he's just not like an orchestrator in the same way that LaMelo or even Hayward or Cody Martin can be, like, or Dennis. Like, it's just, there's just so much missing that makes it like impossible to imagine the team getting better as is. But, and even when guys come back, like, it'll take a while too.
Right, Terry gets assists more just by as a product of how often he has the ball in his hands, more
exactly.
than he's a natural, more as than he's a natural like shot creator distributor type of player.
Exactly, yeah. Like, and when his best role is very clearly as like an off ball mover, just a guy that takes like a 3 to 4 dribbles and kicks the ball out and runs off another screen.
Right, and then Kelly Oubre, and then like a team that has Kelly Oubre shooting 17 shot attempts per game is not going to be good. No. Like, the thing is with Kelly Oubre is when Kelly Oubre's hot, you, like, ride the hot hand, because when Kelly Oubre gets hot, like, no one gets hotter. The problem is the Hornets right now is if Kelly Oubre – the thing that's one of his big drawbacks in general is when Kelly Oubre's cold, Kelly Oubre just thinks he needs to take a few more shots to get hot, and he, like, almost shoots more. And the Hornets cannot rein it in because they just don't have the bodies. at all. So it's just like, oh God, Kelly's 0-for-6. He's about to fire up the next 3 three-pointers he gets because he thinks he just needs to shoot himself out of it. And there's the Hornets just have nothing else they can do. They're just like, well, he's not making them. And that's been one of the downfalls of the offense in general, is they're just not making jump shots. And there's not really much you can do or say about that other than just like, hopefully they turn it around, I guess.
Yeah, there's a lot of hoping that I think we're we're gonna have to do here for the next. I mean, it's crazy that it's only November 30th, but
right.
I mean, basketball is fun, at least just as a basic level fact. You know, the sport of basketball is good, and the Hornets will still be playing basketball between now and the end of the season. So at least we got that.
Yeah. So, and then the other thing, I guess, with the in the kind of in that vein with the season going south very quickly and going poorly. I wrote about this on Wednesday, and I wanted to kind of talk to you and get your thoughts on it. We really should be seeing more Richards and less Plumlee, and probably very little Plumlee by like 2020, by like the new year, if the season continues down this route, right?
I completely agree. I honestly feel like, I mean, not that I would call myself like a defender of Mason Plumlee, but among Hornets fans, I think I probably have like a more favorable view than
I think definitely. You and I both have always yeah. have been relative to the general opinion of him been like Plumlee stands like hard.
Yeah, real honestly, like the general fan probably is like, get this guy out of here for a much longer time than either you or I have been. But
right
at this point, it's just it's inevitable. And for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned in your art, or all of them, but the main reason that I thought was like, he's just not a part of the future. Like,
right.
And the future is not only, it's like literally now, like because if this team is going to be like honest with us themselves, like we've just been talking about, and being like, the likelihood that we make a playoff push that we're hoping for is slim to none, like let's shift gears a little bit. His contract is expiring. Like, are you going to re-sign him for like a mid-level exception deal or probably like a little lower? Like, when you just drafted Kai Jones and Mark Williams in back-to-back drafts, and you have Nick Richards finally blossoming, when you're being able to give him some minutes, like it's just not possible to have him factored into the equation at all in the long term. So
it's also just like prohibitive financially, because, and I have to look at the salaries in general, because we would have expected to have less salary cap space with Miles Bridges, but I don't know what the Hornets cap situation is. Yeah, they don't have any cap room, and they have, because of the cap holds on PJ Washington, Kelly Oubre, and Mason Plumlee. So you got to rescind those to have room to do anything. And like, surely you don't use Mason Plumlee on that $17 million cap hold.
No, it's just like, it's all just points to him being gone either by the trade deadline or very, very soon into the free agency period. So, and it's like, why would you wait for that decision to be made in like a front office perspective, and when you could just make it from an on-court perspective now, like, and just be like, okay, yeah. Nick Richards is good. Like, he's not like showing flashes. He's like showing potential. Like, oh, Nick Richards is doing some things. Like, he's a good center. Like, he has been right all year. Like, he can play minutes every single night. You can rely on him to do different things, but he will do things as well, if not better, than Mason Plumlee in pretty much every category of the game except for like passing. But it's like, the Hornets aren't a good enough offense to where like a passing center matters, like, which is what you said in the article again. Like, it's right. Just like literally everything, it just kind of stacks up to being like, feed minutes to Nick Richards, let Kai and Mark, JT, PJ, maybe even for small ball minutes, like fight for those backup center spot, and then just kind of like, not like phase him out like because he's like not useful, but just phase him out because he just doesn't fit at all anymore with this team specifically.
Right, there's just no point.
Yeah,
it really, there's no point in any direction. Right, like
it's you want to win, it's become so fast too.
Right, if you want to win games, Plumlee needs fewer minutes, because the Hornets are getting really badly outplayed when he's on the floor, and they're playing decently with Richards on the floor. They're playing crazy well with Richards and Dennis Smith on the floor together, which is kind of cool, but that's also super small sample size. But anyway, like, so if they're trying to win games, Richards needs more minutes because he's just playing better. And then if we're building for the future, we don't need 32-year-old expiring Mason Plumlee playing minutes when we have Nick Richards and Kai Jones and then Mark Williams wanting, like, needing more minutes. And then Nick Richards is also a restricted free agent this coming summer. And you kind of want to, I think he's established himself as just good, but I think you want to get as much of that as you can, right? You want to make sure, because players go hot and cold, and you want to make sure that you're not getting, like, Nick Richards playing over his head. You want to make sure he can sustain it for a whole season with extended minutes, and then you have a good idea of how to value him when he hits free agency this coming summer. So I don't know of any defense. The only defense, like I said, and it's kind of mean, but like if the Hornets do want to lose games, I guess that's the one excuse to keep Plumlee out there, because if nothing else, it's solidified that playing Plumlee leads to being outscored.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to see the Hornets tank, you should be rooting for Mason Plumlee to start. And I feel like a lot of the people that are rooting for the Hornets to tank do not root for Mason Plumlee to start. So maybe the Venn diagram is like two circles that are 10 yards apart of those two groups. So
yeah, it's tough. But though, like, I think we'd rather the Hornets lose with like Kai Jones, like,
absolutely
playing, thinking he's the best player on the floor and doing nonsense, as opposed to like Mason Plumlee shooting left-handed free throws and like awkwardly. I don't understand how an NBA player looks so uncomfortable projecting the ball at the basket. Like, even his little jump hooks that he's pretty good at, he like throws them backwards over his head. Like, he just can't shoot like a forward shot with his right hand, with his dominant hand. I don't understand.
Yeah, he has like negative touch. It is pretty, and he's such a good passer and has such a good feel for the game too. Usually, like, those two things are like kind of go hand in hand.
Right,
but I not for Mason Plumlee.
And he's a decent ball handler too. Like, he'll like, yeah, he'll like go and like hit a couple, like a little dribble combo move on a center, and it's like, oh dang, look at Mason. And then he will throw like the hardest brick when he gets to the basket.
Exactly. And I feel like that is what makes people hate his like coast to coast point guard, like point Plumlee takes so much, is because they usually are like $1 million move, 10-cent finish, but like. Right. It's $1 million move. Like, for he does have some pretty expansive, like, open court ball handling for a guy that is like as big as he is. But unfortunately, it just doesn't matter for the Hornets.
It's just very strange. But yeah, I think we'll talk about it some more on the other side, because I think there's some relevance to these other topics. But yeah, I think we're kind of at a point where I don't want to say we've given up on the season, but I think the expectations are now like, we look forward. The really unfortunate part about it is there's like no one to watch and root for right now with the players that are out. Like, normally when the team is bad, like when the Hornets were bad in LaMelo's, are like, and I guess that we're that way, but like normally there's some young guy or a couple young guys on a team to root for when the team's really bad. But right now, it's just like a hodgepodge of like role players, and it's just role players. Like, no, there's no like future star to like really like be looking for flashes from. It's just kind of like boring, just boring bad.
Yeah, right. And like, even when the Hornets had like were bad a couple years ago, like they had Devontae Graham like bursting on the scene. PJ was right. A rookie and was really good. Like, but now it's like, all of the players that are playing big minutes are veterans. A couple of them, Kelly Oubre and Mason, are assuredly not a part of the future. Terry and Gordon, like, we honestly don't even know. PJ's a restricted free agent, and he's like, compared to the rest of some of the players on this team, like, he's not even like a young guy anymore, even though he's still on his rookie contract. And then it's like the rest of the young players are all bigs. So it's like, until Mason Plumlee isn't there anymore, who is the starter that has received the bulk of the minutes due to being like a veteran that can execute schemes and pass and whatnot.
Yeah.
The other guys aren't getting minutes. Like Mark Williams is in the G League. You want to hear Mark Williams' G League stats right now, just for
some we were going to get to that. We're going to get to that in a little bit. So we'll get Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay. All right. We'll get to that one then. But it's
Don't steal my thunder.
All right. Mark has been dominating the G League. Kai has just started. I mean, he's been played in 12 games, but he's just started to get actual minutes against Boston and Minnesota.
Right. During the run of actual first half, not garbage time minutes.
Yeah. Teo Maledon has been pretty good, but he's on a two-way contract. He's not even on the guaranteed roster. He can only play 50 games this season maximum. And then James Bouknight would be the one guy where you could kind of maybe be all right, we're getting something. But he, for lack of a better word, has been terrible this year.
Right. That was
so that's the one thing you could point to be all right, give us something. And it's been all of that we have wanted from James Bouknight came from Bryce McGowan, who is also on a two-way contract and is a rookie himself.
That was what I was going to say. It was the one is Mark Williams when he gets there, and then Kai Jones and James Bouknight are the only guys that are that qualify for be excited for the future guys. And Kai hasn't played yet, so maybe they're the jury's still out on him. And I mean, the jury's still out on all of them, but Kai hasn't played yet. And Booknight's been so bad that it's I don't really know. It's just there's nothing to be excited about. Other than you hope he has these moments against Minnesota where he hit a couple threes and they looked really confident. And it's okay, there you go, James. And then he comes back and gets repeatedly roasted by Jason Tatum in Boston and goes 1-for-7 from the field. It's okay, maybe that wasn't anything in Minnesota or against Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to bring up the Boston game again because that was embarrassing for anybody whose eyes were pointed at the court for that. 48 minutes of basketball, fan, coach, player, whatever. But specifically, when Jason Tatum was calling for switches, backing the ball out, pointing at his teammates to set a screen for him to get James Bouknight switched on him, and then just absolutely dusting him was Jason Tatum does that to basically everyone because he's realistically been the best player in the NBA this season. But
he had 49 points the night after the recording of this. So yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The night we're recording this, he became the first player in NBA history to score 45 points, have 10 rebounds and make 8 threes in a game. So, I mean, that's the type of level that he's on this year, but that was ugly what he was doing to James Bouknight. It was so blatant that he was being put this guy on me. And I'm going to get right by him and do whatever I want. And he did it every single time. It was not good. I was please stop. Please stop.
this is bullying at this point.
Yeah, James Bouknight is way shorter than him. So there's the likelihood that even if James Bouknight was a lockdown defender, that he would be able to stop him is very slim. But it was just the moment made it so much worse, too.
Yeah. And then just with the general state of the game and how bad the Hornets are playing, yeah.
And his season in general, it was Jesus.
I know, just the guy needs a win, and then the Hornets need a win from him, just to give us something because it's been bad. Yeah. The only thing is he has basically this season to figure it out, and I just think about Jordan Poole and Anfernee Simons, who are the worst players in the NBA in their early, first season or two in the league. And they've become really good, especially Anfernee Simons. Jordan Poole's really good too, but Jordan Poole's still
Yeah, he's a bit of a sieve on defense, unfortunately. And Simons is really good though.
Jordan Poole also just strikes me as how do I put this? Cause it's going to sound really incorrect, but he's just a really, really good, effective bad player because he's still really reckless and his decision making is very questionable, but he's just talented enough that it doesn't matter. And I've never seen a player get called for so many travels on the catch, but
he is if Kelly Oubre grew up with Instagram,
right?
envision his play style.
And also the Warriors have figured out where they just don't try to fit Jordan Poole into anything. They just put Jordan Poole in with the bench and they're all right, Jordan, this is your time to shine. Go crazy. And then the whole entire offense is just feed Jordan the rock and hope he gets hot. And because if he's not a player that it's like Kelly Oubre, he's a good comparison where it's like you don't rein him in, you just like live with the recklessness and hope that his talent, you know, he makes it work because he's so talented. But anyway, we're gonna take a quick break and then we'll come back to talk about the buzz, who's buzzing and wasn't, and kind of look ahead as best we can to the rest or the next chunk of the season. So be right back.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to That The High Podcast. This is Jonathan, joined by Chase. Chase, I know we kind of put this up. We kind of threw this together quickly. So I don't know if do you have buzzing, who's buzzing, and who wasn't? Because if you don't, I have a couple we can talk about.
You know what? I think I'll give the floor to you for this one. I hadn't prepared. I don't want to half-ass it. You know.
Oh, it's okay. So the my wasn't was just going to be the Hornets offense in general, and they've been bad all season, but the level of incompetence has hit. So the Hornets beat the Warriors basically around the last time we talked, and we were like, pretty good, you know, this season's looking pretty good, this team might be legit. And that was 15 games ago, and since that time the Hornets rank 30th in offensive rating, 30th in field goal percentage, 30th in three-point percentage. There are 30 teams in the NBA. That's not good.
No, that is not good. And the offensive rating in that time, too, is a cool 103. 103 points per 100 possessions. That's bad. You score 2 points for every shot in basketball, folks. And three for those, the ones that come from behind that big circular line that you see on the court out there. That's bad. Like, I'm not sure, like, what level of historically bad, but it has to be some level, right?
So 103 is roughly the offensive rating of the we are trying to be as bad as the NBA's ever seen Oklahoma City Thunder of the last couple years.
Yeah, that's not where you want to be for a team that was trying to win basically every game.
And is like constructed mostly of veterans getting minutes right now. Like that's like rookies that don't know what they're doing type offensive numbers. Like that's like the process 76ers type of offensive rating. And like, or just like anybody in like the mid 2000s or 90s where teams like didn't know how to play basketball yet. So yeah, that's, which, by the way, just as an aside, I picked a random year, 2003-2004. The Raptors had the worst offensive rating in the league with 95.3.
Ugh, yuck. Yeah. See, and
people used to. How do people like basketball then?
No, I know that I was. I was reading like I don't remember what it was, but it was some article online, and it was about talking about like how pace has like it's gone like up and down like way more than you'd think. Like in the 60s and 70s,
yeah,
like basketball, they were flying up and down the court, and like
like 120 possession per game, and we're like at 100-ish right now on average.
Yeah, They were.
they were shooting like 38% from the field and scoring 125 points a game with no 3-point line.
Yeah, like those guys were chucking. But like in the mid-2000s, it slowed to a crawl. I have no idea how anybody in their like late 20s, early 30s got into basketball as children. Like it is remarkable that they were watching like all of these guys just like dribble the ball up the court and like stand there and like point around and then miss for like
feed the post and then shoot
a
22-foot jump shot with 3 seconds left on the shot clock.
But like the Hornets offense is that quality, but while being in 2022 and trying to do most of the modern basketball things
right, we're doing the things that make offense easier and still having a terrible offense.
Yeah, like they're seventh in offensive rebounding percentage. Like that's pretty good. 30.9% of their own misses and in an offensive rebound, like almost a third. Like that's a very good number. Like you would think that would make them reasonable on offense, but it's like how often those offensive rebounds are ending in another or in second chance points and aren't ending just in another miss that ends in a defensive rebound. You know, that's a different story, but
I mean, here's to add more context to this. The Hornets are third in the league in percentage of shots at the rim, and they're 30th in effective field goal percentage.
Yeah, like, like that's brutal, man. Like, you're just, in the wise words of one Gordon Hayward, they are just, like, smoking bunnies just every time. Nobody's finishing at the rim. And this was something I meant to bring up when we were talking about Nick and Mason, too. I hadn't noticed this until I was, like, really digging into, like, Hornets stats recently. I think a big reason why the offense is like not good with Mason, and it's not like great, I guess, with Nick, but is a little bit better, is they're both like not good rim shooters like at all this year. They're both at 65% at the rim. That's like bottom quarter of the league for centers. So hopefully like when Kai and Mark start playing, those guys like dunk everything and finish. Like Kai is the most athletic 7-footer in the universe, it seems. Mark is super strong already. Hopefully that becomes like more of a strength than a weakness as the year goes on, and hopefully those two guys specifically start playing more minutes with the Hornets.
One other thing with this cleaning the glass stuff that I pulled up, if the Hornets shot league average based on their location of their shots, like they would have the fifth best effective field goal percentage in the league. So like That means the process is great. They're taking the right shots. They're just missing them.
And I think that's what makes it like that's how you're able to lose by 35 and shoot 50% like in that in a game against like the Celtics. Like you're doing the right things. It's just like it works sometimes, but not often enough. And like with the level of talent you'd have on this roster, you'd have to shoot 70% on like ever to just make up for like the defensive mistakes or turnovers or whatever else it would be that you're unfortunately giving up.
And then to the talent, another thing, just like the Warriors are 20 have the 24th best like shot quality, so to speak, and they're second in effective field goal percentage because they're just crazy. Steph Curry. But yeah, so the Hornets, and that's like where circle back to like the offense being bad. It's what's so frustrating is like they get open looks and they get to the basket and they just miss. And one of the things about their missing, they get their shot blocked more than anybody else in the league by a lot. I don't know if it's felt like that anecdotally, and maybe that, I don't know if you felt that too, but statistically, the Hornets get their shots blocked the most, more than anyone else in the league, and it's not really close. Like, the Hornets average 7.1 blocked shots against per game. Like, they get 7.1 shots blocked per game. And the next highest is 6.3.
Damn. Yeah, I hadn't really noticed that, like, just watching games. But I guess it does make sense, like, with what I just said about Nick and Mason's rim finishing. Yeah. That's always kind of been a weakness for Terry. PJ has always been a little bit subpar as a that actually does make a lot of sense.
I'm about to look. I feel like PJ's got to be one of the most blocked players in the league.
PJ, yeah, that's, I've kind of That's not just PJ in general, but that skill set specifically, I've kind of just given up on that improving. Yeah, he's at 71% at the rim this year, which is better, but it's still 45th percentile in the league, like well below, or not well below, but markedly below average. League average. Like he was in the 7th percentile his second year in the league at 54% at the rim, like making just over half of your shots within 4 feet of the basket is like that's not what you want from a guy that plays in the front court. Like that's very detrimental to your offense and how defenses are going to treat you when you catch the ball at the rim.
it's just been a failure on all fronts. And like, I know the easy culprit is Steve Clifford and the coaching staff with all of the turmoil that they went through last year. But like we said, the quality of shots are good. The players are just not making the shots. And the 3-point percentage is a product of that because players are just missing open shots. And then the shots blocked against that I think it shows the quality of decision making at the basket, right? Of like shooting contested shots or not having the savvy to like draw fouls or draw contact or kick out or whatever. We're just jamming our head like against the wall, trying to just like throw up shots at the basket and not playing with any control or poise and just getting. And then I think it's also the players themselves. Like Plumlee is blocked a lot because he has no fluidity at all. Richards is not always the strongest going up for around the rim. PJ gets blocked or stripped. It seems like 30% of the time that he drives to the basket. So it's just not working. The shot, the idea is good. The execution's been poor. On a positive note, the buzzin' that I stopped you from talking about earlier is Mark Williams is the best player in the world.
Mark Williams is buzzing. The Greensboro Swarm might be buzzing. They had themselves quite a night. They did lose to the second one. And I'll have you know,
I guess the same
Maine
team.
Celtics swept the Westchester Knicks in a 2-game series. So I'd just like to throw that out there that did not happen.
Congratulations to the Maine Celtics for sweeping the Westchester Knicks. But the Hornets are the Swarm, I mean, which I've become accustomed to seeing the Swarm just lose all of their games because they've been bad for most of their existence. And when I checked the score and saw they beat the Knicks, the Westchester Knicks, by 43, I was like, what happened there? And, like, shout out, JT Thor had 30 points in his assignment down there, which is, like, good for him. He needs to be better. And Jello with his by far
career
best game
high,
as a pro.
Yeah,
26 points. But this is about Mark Williams. He had 26 points and 12 rebounds in the blowout win. And then they proceeded to play the next night against the Westchester Knicks and lose to the same team with the same players. And everybody else kind of came back down to earth except for Mark Williams, who had 37 points and 11 rebounds. So what's that, like 31.5 points per game over the two games? Pretty good. 11.5 rebounds.
Yeah, he's been incredible. His in 7 G League games, he's at 23.6 points per game, 12.6 rebounds, 4.4 of which are offensive rebounds, and then 2.3 blocks and shooting 63.7%. Like, you can't really ask for anything more from a player like him. He does really well in pick and rolls. He defends the rim well. He finishes well. Like, there's nothing you'd want to see from him.
I would like to see a couple more assists, but that's hard to do as a big in the G League.
Yeah, right.
Not that I want him to be like Mason Plumlee, like facilitating the offense, but just like I feel like a center getting like 1.5 to 2.5 assists per game just shows that they have a good feel for like dropping the ball off on a short roll or like kicking out after offensive rebounds and things like that. But the assist numbers have ticked up a little bit in the last couple of games as opposed to the first few. But as important as the box score numbers, like the actual productivity itself and the way he's getting the numbers is encouraging. Like he's hit a couple face-up jump shots. He's looking a lot more decisive and confident on the catch than he did in the summer league and in the preseason, where he was a little slow to gather and his hands were kind of shaky. Like, he looks comfortable now. And I know it's just the G League, but that's good that he's making demonstrable progress from where we saw him in the summer.
Yeah, he looks like he rolls way harder to the rim. And, like, I feel like one of the things that a lot of people maybe not, like, were worried about but thought might hinder him a little bit in the NBA is that he's not, like, a great, like, fluid athlete. But he seems to be right now. Like, when he,
he
sets a
like
screen
it.
And, yeah, and he flips his hips open and, like, he takes, like, a couple big steps, like, towards the rim. Like, he covers a lot of ground and he can do it very quickly. He's not stiff, like, at all defensively. He's, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that switches on to, like, smaller players on the perimeter and looks good, like, out on an island that's, like, nearly impossible to do if you're as big as Mark is, really. And, like, considering that NBA guards are so quick and shifty now, like, but he's going to be able to guard guys that are a little bit smaller than him, I think. And, like, small ball five matchups won't, like, eliminate him from being on the floor, which is, like, it was a concern prior to it being drafted. So I'd like to see it translate to the NBA, obviously, but everything he's done in the G League has been encouraging.
Well, to circle this back to where we were with the center conversation, it'd be nice, and I don't know if we want to jump into it right away, or I don't really care if we do, but it'd be nice to see if, again, if this, assuming the season continues down the path it's going, that by the time we kind of get into January towards the All-Star break, that Mason Plumlee starts getting DNP CD'd and Mark Williams starts getting those minutes, just to see if he's, like, you know, what he's got at the NBA level.
You know what I was actually thinking about? There are a bunch of teams in the NBA that you could reasonably say need big man depth. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Plumlee is, like, one of the first, or, like, not first, but more popular names to be shuffled around at the deadline, along with Kelly Oubre, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, both of those names seem like they're going to be gone. What do you think about, like, that prospect, I guess? Because, yeah, I mean, that's still a long ways away, but I imagine that a lot of Hornets fans are either thinking about it themselves or have already
I think everybody is wishing for it, I think. I don't think either of them are liked players.
No, like, no, unfortunately.
I think if you were to do like a approval ratings, I think both of them pretty bad approval ratings among Hornets fans. I think they would be, it would be like a swap of like expiring contracts, and the Hornets might get like a second round pick or something for, especially for Plumlee. Like, they're not going to get, I don't think they're going to get anything of real significance for either of them.
I think they could get something
Oubre,
decent for
maybe.
Kelly. I think
yeah,
they could
Oubre,
get
maybe
a couple seconds,
depends.
Like 2 seconds for Kelly or something.
Yeah, it just depends on like kind of what shakes out in the rest of the trade market and who needs what. And I guess, and also kind of what Kelly does over the next couple months. Because he's so hot and cold, like if we get some good Kelly in January and February, like you can maybe convince some team that like this guy's got like some, can give you guys some scoring punch and some, defensive versatility, because he has been very good this year.
Yeah, Steve Clifford's definitely renewed him defensively.
Yeah, if nothing else, I know he's not always super aware defensively, but he's a menace in terms of deflections and things like that. So I think he could fetch something of value. Plumlee's more of just like a, we don't want him anymore. We'll take whatever anybody's willing to give us, just because anything's better than nothing type of situation, I think. Like, in some team, because I think some team is just trading for him for depth, like you said, like, where, like, a player gets hurt and they, like, trade the injured. Like, I'm thinking about, like, the Cavs with, like, Ricky Rubio, or the Jazz with, like, Joe Ingles, where, like, I don't remember who they traded them for, and I think they're more useful players than Plumlee, but they're like, well, you're out for the season and your contract's expiring, so we're just going to trade your cap figure to get a player that can actually play type of situation.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, if looking at the East right now, like there are a lot of teams here that are probably going to get like desperate at some point and are going to need play. Like, just it's basically Milwaukee and Boston are the top two, and then Cleveland is there. The Pacers, you can't imagine, are going to be buyers at the trade deadline. But then
no,
like Philly,
even if
Atlanta,
they are playing well, yeah,
yeah, right. Like they've been really good so far, but it's, I feel like the whole NBA universe is kind of just waiting to be like, when are the Pacers going to have a 5-game losing streak that puts them
right,
like under 500? But I mean, maybe it just never happens. But after that, it's like Philly, Atlanta, Toronto, Brooklyn, Washington, New York, Miami, Chicago. All of those teams thought they'd be better than they are right now.
Yeah.
The Hornets did too, but the Hornets are in an even worse situation than any of them. All of those teams, especially
the Hornets,
are
like last year's Pacers.
Yeah, yeah, literally. Like, they're like, oh, okay.
The Pacers were like, they beat us in the play-in. They're like, all right, let's take the next step. And then they're like, oh, never mind.
Yeah, they're like, okay, let's two steps back, one step back, two steps forward. How about that? But,
yeah,
like, teams like New York, Chicago, Miami, Brooklyn, like, they're all going to have to convince themselves, like, especially given the high salary, like, you know, big name veterans they have on their team, that they need help. Like, the Hornets are the team that's going to be giving away players in that regard. Like, and like those, that's going to work, I think, for both sides, because the Hornets probably aren't going to expect much from Plumlee, like you've been saying, like some protected second, like a flyer on a young player or whatever, because the Hornets do have an open roster spot to play with also. But and then like for Kelly, like there's a chance if he heats up, like you could get maybe like, if Kelly Oubre, what does Kelly Oubre have to do between now and the trade deadline to get a first round pick, like have like protected or whatever that would turn into 2 seconds, but
have the chance of getting one? I think if he keeps doing what he is doing, you could get a team like first round pick. I think
Philadelphia is gonna have to do something like that.
Sorry. But yeah, like, and I don't know off the top of my head, like I need to look at whose picks they can't trade because of like the Stepien rule and stuff. But yeah, I can see, like, for teams that are trying to win, they don't care about first round picks. And so you could get like a team like Philadelphia or Phoenix, or especially because Kelly was really good in Phoenix when he was there and they need to replace Jay Crowder. Like those kind of teams to give like a 2024 first round pick or something, just, you know, even if they don't want to give up something this year, you know, they could just give up a future first, because they don't care, because future firsts don't exist for teams that are trying to win now. So I think it's possible if he keeps playing this way and keeps averaging close to 20 points a game and getting a bunch of deflections. I think if you really force the issue, I wouldn't say it's like easy or likely, and I wouldn't to say it's like a failure if they don't, but it's possible that they can get a first for Kelly. Maybe not like a 2023 first, but a first round pick of some kind.
Yeah, maybe like almost like what they gave to New York to get Kai Jones, like one that is like top 14, top 16, top 18, and then like 2 seconds or something. But
yeah,
I think if Hornets fan that enjoys like the team transaction and like personnel movement part of the, or aspect of the NBA, like there's definitely some stuff to look forward to for the rest of the year for the Hornets, because they have the opportunity to move some pieces around and do some fun stuff with the draft asset cupboard that they have. And obviously now I think many of us have turned our focus towards the lottery odds, and then that's another fun thing too, is to go on Tankathon and see who gets Victor Wembanyama.
How many times do you have to simulate to get Victor Wembanyama?
No joke, I did it the other day, and it took me like 25 tries to get the Hornets the first.
Let's do it right now. Great podcasting. Sim lottery. I did it on the first try.
Nah, it took me 4, so there we go. All right, this is good.
Things are turning around.
Yeah, things are turning around. We went from 25 to 4, and now we just have to not do it again until the actual lottery. And then we'll both just get it on the first try and we'll be good.
Right, exactly. I got it right here in front of me. Draft Lottery Simulator, Charlotte Hornets first on the first try. So that's it. Like, go ahead and give us the first pick. One other thing real quick on the buzzin'. Shout out, just because he deserves it, to Ashton Hagans.
That was awesome. That game 22 was so assist sick.
In the blowout win for his 22 assist triple-double. And then following it up with 30 points in the loss the next night. But, so that's something I guess someone to keep an eye on if the season continues to go poorly.
Yeah, if Teo Maledon burns up those 50 two-way games and has to be elevated to the roster, like why not put him on there if he keeps this up?
Right, and I mean, 22 assists is insane.
Second highest ever in G League history. The most in a triple double. That triple double was fresh off the plane too. Like he got signed. He's been on 3 G League teams this year. Like he got cut and waived and cut, or signed and waived, signed, waived, signed with Greensboro. Took a plane there. Got off like probably 3 hours before the game. This is such a classic G League scenario. This happens like all the time, especially in the last like couple or the last year when they had like COVID issues and stuff. Like, he didn't have a name on the back of his jersey because every team has like a couple of like blank ones in case a player gets there in a situation where Ashton did. Like, he gets off.
Yeah, because the plane. Because players are shuffling around so much and
yeah, exactly. Like
commercial flights and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, literally. Like, he's like, oh, my flight gets in at this time. Like, someone pick me up from the airport. Like, I'll just come to the game and start warming up. Like,
yeah.
And then he gets off the plane and drops 22 assists with players he's never played with before. And, like, with coaches that he just met, like, or not just met all of them for the first time, but is just playing for the first time. Like, it's completely ridiculous that he was able to do that.
He's got the same birthday as me, so that's cool. So,
oh, that's really fan. Cool. Look at that.
Big fan.
Not this is an Ashton Hagans podcast. I actually really liked him coming out of college, I think, relative to consensus. I thought he'd be pretty good in the NBA. So hopefully he gets a shot.
Yeah, somebody to keep an eye on. With that said, the Hornets going forward, we have the Wizards on Friday, and then Bucks, Clippers, Nets, Knicks, 76ers. Doesn't look great.
A lot of them are at home. We got that.
I guess. That,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, four of the six are at home. The ones on the road are like the two teams that the Hornets might have, other than the Wizards of the next five, like the two teams the Hornets probably have the best shot of beating are the ones that are on the road. And then I guess Philadelphia hinges on their health, because like the version of the 76ers that the Hornets played last week is a winnable game, obviously. The real 76ers, like Joel Embiid is going to have 40 points and 20 rebounds in the first half.
Yeah, I think James Harden will definitely be back by that game too. So
yeah. And he was supposed to try to come back like on this weekend, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so. So that will, yeah, that one won't be a repeat performance of the day before or night before Thanksgiving game against Philadelphia. It's so funny too that it's like the Hornets had just won those two games in a row and like nobody's mood shifted at all.
Right.
Like
I know.
Everyone was just like, yeah, like that doesn't matter. Like this is still dreadful. And game after that, it was everyone was proven right for their pessimism.
Right, the 76ers was like their B team basically because they're missing their four best players.
Yeah,
and then Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota was a legit win, but also like Minnesota's been.
Yeah, they played well in that game. We'll give them credit.
But I mean, you know, like you said, I think we've seen enough to this point that, and also as Charlotte sports fans, we know that bad teams can occasionally play well. So it's like we're not going to overreact to that one.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's the NBA. They'll win. They'll win some games. They got good players, but yeah. You know they won't win all of them, as evidenced by.
Right. So this next stretch, like, and I think part of it's probably just because of how bad they've played this year. But like I'm looking through, basically like the end of the calendar year, and it's like Washington's winnable, and then it's just like that list of teams that I rattled off, and then you have a Detroit game that's winnable, and then a bunch of teams, and then it's a West Coast road trip, which the Hornets will probably, I would not be surprised if the Hornets don't win a single game on that road trip. Like the worst, they all the teams they play are good on the West Coast road trip. Like they, it's not like they mix in like the Thunder or
like Houston or the only bad team they play is the Lakers. So,
yeah.
But if they all and they that team has LeBron James, so I can't imagine that's going to go well. Yeah.
Right. It's like I just don't see wins on the schedule right now. I think is just the quality of the Hornets this year, because normally like you look at the schedule and it's like, all right, like you can find a chunk of games where it's like, oh, there's a winnable stretch of games in there, but I feel like there's so few teams that you feel confident in the Hornets' ability to beat that you can't find more than like two in a row that like, oh, there's some games the Hornets could win.
So you know how like a couple months ago or probably a month ago, the Hornets got flexed out of that national TV game?
Yes.
They have one more, or two more, actually, remaining. It's January 26th against Chicago and February 10th against Boston. What are the chances they play both of those games on national TV?
The TNT one, they probably do.
If LaMelo and Lonzo are both healthy.
I was going to say, the LaMelo and Lonzo both being healthy, and then just the NBA is usually pretty, the cupboard's pretty bare on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
True.
Won't be many games to replace it with. But the ESPN one on a Wednesday, or I guess it's a Friday, but either way, the ESPN one against Boston, pretty, I would definitely bet that they don't play that one on ESPN.
Yeah, I mean, this stretch coming up, like, I mean, every stretch that you have, no matter how many games you want to block it off into, is like a season-defining stretch. But this is really, really going to be it. Like, I think that they might have been broken with that 35-point loss against Boston, the front office, and their hopes and spirits for this year. But, like, a homestand, if you lose most of these games to, like, Milwaukee, Washington, L.A., New York, Atlanta, like, and you're at home, like, you're not healthy, but like, you haven't been healthy all season, so that can't be an excuse for everything every time,
right?
Like, if you don't salvage it, like, literally right now,
yeah,
that's it. Like, it's yep. just that's it.
Yep. There's six of eight at home before they play six straight on the road out west.
Yep.
And if they haven't gotten themselves, if they don't get very hot on this homestand, like, because they're going to lose, they're almost assuredly going to lose ground on the West Coast road trip. The Hornets always lose ground on their West Coast road trips. I can't remember the last time they played well on a West Coast road trip. So they're going to lose ground on that. If they don't, like, make up some ground beforehand, they have no shot.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks given the expectations, but.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's a much longer, multiple podcast long philosophical discussion, I guess, that we could have on whether or not it's a good thing that they're going to be losing these games.
If nothing else, I don't know a whole lot about it yet, and it's always optimistic at this time, but the lottery next year looks crazy.
Obviously
Wembanyama is like the big prize, and Scoot is like. That normally would be the big prize that happens to be in the same draft as Wembanyama. It's like John Morant, Zion Williamson type of situation. But even beyond them, like, that next tier of players looks really, really good.
Yeah, if you're in the top five, you're getting a guy that's got a pretty strong chance to be the first or second best player on a really, really good playoff team. Like, Wemby and Scoot are awesome. Like, Amen Thompson with Overtime Elite is awesome. Cam Whitmore and Nick Smith. Yeah, Asor is awesome too. Cam Whitmore and Nick Smith haven't even played in college yet, but they're like the two best NCAA freshmen, probably. Duke has a couple of good players. Keontae George from Baylor. Like, Brandon Miller has been turning heads from Alabama. Like, Grady Dick from Kansas is good. Kalel Ware. Like, there's a Jarace Walker, Anthony Black. Like, there's a long, long list of players that are like already proving to be like very, very worthy lottery top 10, top 5 selections. So yeah. we have that to look forward to. Like, if you like the team building aspect of basketball, this Hornets season is very much not over. If you only root for wins, then God bless you.
Sorry.
Otherwise, we've got some stuff to talk about here.
Yep. Anything else before we call it a show?
I think that'll do it for me this time around. Yeah.
All right, well, we'll be back soon to talk more about Hornets basketball, and I don't know. We'll see how these next couple of games go, because I think this is a pretty season-defining homestand, and we will recap that when it's all done. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Thanks for listening, everyone. See you.